listeners to time for an awakening on Black Talk Radio Network, new media for the new millennia. This is a history and current events program from a cultural perspective. We find this program necessary because Hosea 4:6 states, "My people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge." But we as a people can turn this around. Proverbs 4:7 states, "Wisdom is the principal thing, therefore get wisdom. With all thy getting, get an understanding." Again, welcome to the program this evening with your hosts, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. The number to reach us to join the conversation this evening is 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We're streaming live at several locations. You can go to timeforanawakening.com, which is the homepage, and catch the live stream from that location. You can go to www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. Again, that's www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening and catch the live stream there also. You can go to abitumi.com/timeforanawakening. That's abitumi.com/timeforanawakening and catch the live stream there. Or you can download TuneIn radio app. TuneIn is a free app. And on your devices, just in the TuneIn search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening. There you'll see the icon, and you can stream your program live, even into your car if you have the Bluetooth capabilities or the auxiliary connection. Again, it's Time for an Awakening radio program with the live stream on the TuneIn app. Drop us an email at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Again, that's timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Time for an Awakening also has a fan page on Facebook. In that Facebook search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening radio program. There you'll always see interesting content being posted daily by myself or Brother Richard. Do me a favor before you leave that page, just hit that like button. It's Time for an Awakening radio program with the fan page on Facebook, and Time for an Awakening media is there. Always full of the latest podcasts of the various programs on Time for an Awakening media, interesting articles that you can read, download at later times, and share with your friends. Also, check out that Time for an Awakening marketplace and our partnership with the BB2Me. Always interesting things in the marketplace all the time. Various African language classes, classes on education, economics, social systems, health, and much, much more being taught by professors on both the continent and in the diaspora. So make that one of your favorites. Put that in your address bar. That's timeforanawakening.com. Timeforanawakening.com. It'll take you straight to Time for an Awakening media. It's 8:07 here in the city of Philadelphia on this chilly Friday evening here in the city of Philadelphia, and we're in freestyle Friday mode here on Time for an Awakening, as we do on Fridays. You are the guests, and you can dial in and put anything on the table you want. The floor is yours, and you can do that by dialing 215-490-9832. Again, that's 215-490-9832. We'll be right back to get the program started after a brief word from our sponsors.
Mr. Moderator, our distinguished guests, brothers and sisters, our friends and our enemies. Everybody is here.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency and business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Overworked? Suffering with an underperforming company, headache customer, staff, or vendors? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? We turned a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one transformation created for entrepreneurs like you in various industries around the country. Not what you're used to from accounting and business consulting? Well, welcome to New Business Solutions. If you're ready to go beyond advising, coaching, and training and get implemented results, call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions apply the best comprehensive administrative, accounting, operations, human resources, management, sales, and marketing to help you actualize your vision for yourself and your company. From anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072. Spelled new as in numerous on your device right now. Book your free consultation at newbusinesssolutions.com.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening. With your host, Brother Elliot, Sundays 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m. for podcasting or live program scheduling. Hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. It's 8:12 here in the city of Philadelphia. And before we get started with our program, I want to welcome in my co-host, Philadelphia activist and tour guide at the African American Museum here in Philadelphia. Brother Richard is with us. Brother Richard.
Yes, sir, Brother Elliot. How you doing there?
How are you, sir?
I'm all right. You know, the public information is, you know, from a national level, I guess, always makes me raise a whole lot of questions. I don't know if you heard that congresswoman, that they moved from her seat. You know, she's saying she might have said some things, but, you know, what's that, QAnon and conspiracy theories and doesn't square with her beliefs, her ambitions. And the reason I'm raising that is because how do you deal with this, you know, where white people are right, as usual? you know, but, and then, you know, so just a whole lot of other stuff. But I have to say, you know, this being Black History Month, I'm glad to hear what's going on in Haiti and pushing for, pushing for a general strike and trying to make sure that this, that prime minister don't try to make himself a dictator for life. I'm glad to see that kind of motivation and mobilization and organizing that's going on.
Now, that prime minister that's there, he's backed by the United States.
Yeah,
trying to find out his name so I can.
Morsi, Juvenal. I know I'm messing up his first name. J-O-V-E-N-E-L, Mose. Is the one, is the current president. Now, didn't they have some? Was that Haiti, where they had people like mercenaries trying to go into the country and got caught?
Yeah, that was Haiti.
You know, and, you know, it was supposed to be stealing, you know, possibly robbing either going to rob some financial aspect in order to finance this here president's stay, but they got caught. It was interesting in this here article I'm looking at, Haiti Begins General Strike, which came out on the first. You made the point about the America, and they say many fear that Marseille, and that's Juvenal Messier, because there's another Charles Marseille who is running another, who is a favorite amongst the people. Many fear that Marseille is taking the preparatory steps to rule as a dictator of Haiti. He failed to call parliamentary elections within the required period, and since January 2020, he has been ruling by decree without a sitting parliament. Marseille has also handpicked a committee to rewrite Haiti's constitution, sparking fears for many who remember the decades of dictatorship under the Duvalier family, which only ended in 1986. Even more concerning for the working class of Haiti, Marseille, like the Duvaliers before him, is backed by the United States. This means that, if necessary, the U.S. will use all of their imperial power to keep Marseille in power as long as he represents their imperial interests. Any curiosity reading of history shows that the imperial interest of United States empire means devastation for the working class of Haiti and other imperialist countries. And, you know, and that was this left voice. That's the, where this article was. And then it was interesting for me to find that, if I can find that the, I guess I lost it, but the USDA is has provided USDA has committed an additional $75.5 million for assistance to Haiti. So it kind of reinforces what the article and maybe what the people are saying. And that's why there's general strike. And the only reason I think that it's important in the moment of Black history is because, you know, Haiti is the only liberated state of African people in the Western Hemisphere. And, you know, and its impact on people in North America, African, free Africans and Africans in North America was, you know, really critical. I mean, some say the influence of Denmark Vesey, Nat Turner, all the rebellions of that period was because of Haiti's liberating ability. So I just think in this moment, it's a good thing to keep an eye on what's going on in Haiti.
Yeah, I'm just looking at this article here in Al Jazeera, where it says, and this is dated today, in fact, that the U.S. urges polls in Haiti, but says president can stay until 2022. Says the United States has accepted the unpopular Haitian president, Jovenel Moïse. I'm just like you. I know I'm butchering his name. Has accepted his claim to hold power for another year. So this president here that the people object to is backed by the United States.
And it's just interesting, as you know, we're looking at the Biden's team come into shape and its quest to have, I don't know what to say. Are we supposed to say people of color, African Americans, Black people? What are we supposed to say? Are we supposed to say Americans that are Black, that are in so many of these different positions? You know, positions. Was that Secretary of Defense under the UN? I mean, head of the ambassador to the UN, and you know, going into the, you know, what's that? The defense domestic defense council. What policies are they shaping that would be in favor of those, just as an example, and of those in of the people who are saying that they are fearful of this here person who's in power in Haiti, as an example, maintaining, because what they see some signs, and they see that America is center stage. Would that mean that these people who are coming in, who are melanated, people of color, African-American, Black, you know, first time this and the first time that, will they be in support of the people, or will they be in support, you know, maintain the relationships as it is? And do we as Black people benefit from the relationship as it is? Or do we, or we, are we more in line with, in general, are we more in line with the working people, the people of Haiti?
Well,
who have fear and concern?
The majority of our people are not aware of some of these things, Richard, because their watchmen don't discuss these things with them. Foreign policy and this government's relation to nations of African descent around the world and even on the continent is not discussed by Black leadership here in this country, or is discussed by the parameters that Europeans want them to discuss it. So you're not going to hear, I'll be shocked if you hear, I think Susan Rice hears domestic policy, and I think the woman that we discussed before,
Linda Thomas Greenfield,
has something to do with the U.S. and UN, their foreign policy.
Yeah, ambassador.
Yeah. So, you know, they're not good. You know, I was looking at that text that you sent me the other day with this symposium that's happening at Howard University. And she's hosting it. And we talked about her before, I think about a month and a half ago, right, when we were talking about Blacks in foreign domestic policy and ones to kind of make a scorecard and keep an eye on. Now, they just got in office. This administration just got in office, and these Blacks are on their job already. They already got their marching orders. That text that you sent me, let me read it for the listening audience. This is a symposium at Howard University for February 19th at 9 a.m., and it goes all day. The symposium is Reshaping U.S. / Africa Policy and the Role of the HBCUs. And she's hosting it at the Ralph Bunche Center for International Affairs on Howard University campus. Hosted by Ambassador Linda Thomas Greenfield, which would be the keynote speaker, and other prominent African-American scholars and diplomats have been invited to present around the themes. Critical assessment of U.S.-Africa policies, lessons learned from African-American engagement, building a better, more diverse diplomatic corps, and strategies for engaging Africa's development. Now, Richard, who is that supposed to be in favor of? Is that in favor of the diaspora and us building better relations with the continent? Or who is that in favor of? All of these things here at Howard University, is that trying to build an assimilationist mind among our young people at that university? I would say unequivocally that it is, unless I'm proven wrong.
And I mean, and it's interesting, you know, at a time when, and maybe I'm not informed enough, Elliot, but, you know, we know we've heard, I think it was January 1st, where the continent just created its continental free trade zone agreement, you know, which they're going to be able to, you know, trade amongst themselves in order to strengthen themselves. And rely on each other, you know, compared to relying on foreign Western European countries or financial systems. And here, you know, America, who needs, still needs, that I'm aware of, still needs some of those raw materials.
Still needs some of them. Yeah, okay.
You know, I mean, that's for the specialists, you know. But I mean, this is what we have to understand, and we know, which we have talked about before. So under Obama, the first leg was to put, and what did they call it, AFRICOM, to put the military support system throughout a lot of the African countries. So here we're coming back, 8 years later. And here they're going to have a, because when they say a symposium and they're bringing experts, right? That means that they are strategizing. I mean, publicly strategizing.
Certainly.
Because they don't already, you know, privately strategize, but they're publicly strategizing. And as you said, they're gearing up the next generation to be engaged, which I think is interesting, you know, from that respect, because just last year, you know, the right to return, or, you know, how young African Americans, and then they even had Nancy Pelosi and the crew go on there with their little kit they call strip, you know, doing a 16, you know, like doing a 400 year thing. But all these laying the basis of positioning, right? And it goes to the heart of your question. In my mind, are they positioning the next generations Africans in the HBCUs in order to be, let's go back to the African Colonization Society, you know, to be surrogates, even though they were looking for their own freedom, to be surrogates of the United States in order to position itself, in order to continue to be able to get those what they would call strategic resources. Is this a means, especially when, you know, just like Haiti, having young people, you can see young people in Senegal, you can see young people in, they just had the election, Uganda, you know, and young people are losing their life and coming to the street and saying that they want to remove. So, and Africa having right now one of the youngest populations on the planet, is this a, you know, assisting in shaping the minds to be like, you can deal with your identity and your heritage, but you still be our agents to, as the article mentioned, the American Empire. And that wouldn't be bad if American Empire and wasn't so vicious, and more importantly for me, Elliot, if we as Black people was going to benefit from it. But in general, there will be some, but I mean in general.
It would be bad to me because our people will never have freedom here in this country. They will never have freedom. So it's bad to me to develop a mindset of these assimilationists that are on these college campuses. They've been instructed to do this, and they're not doing it unwillingly. They want more of these type of mindsets to be developed among our young people. Mm-hmm. They know that they can't influence the masses of people, whether it's here or especially on the continent. I think they have the youngest population of any continent.
Right.
But they can influence the people that they deem to have in leadership, the same way it was going on in Haiti.
Right.
They don't care necessarily about the people with the general strike and, you know, unless they unify, then it's a problem. Mm-hmm. But as long as you have sporadic, type of what they consider dissident, things of that nature, they figure that they can control that if they control the people that's in leadership. And then ostracize other people that don't want to go along, like the Zimbabwe and what they've done to that country. The only reason that country is under sanctions and ostracized by the United States and not even necessarily by the UN because they don't supposedly don't agree with it. But they're ostracized because they kicked Europeans out of there and demanded or took their independence. Other than that, it's they can't even use that monicum that they throw in a lot of these countries, that they're state sponsors of terrorism and things of that nature. It's no evidence of that. The only thing that they got against that country is what they did by kicking their European brothers out of there. So all of a sudden, they hold the whole country under sanctions and hurt everybody there.
Which means that, you know, especially now that rightly or wrongly, depending on anybody's point of view, which we're open here, you know, in Freestyle Friday to hear your point of view of this topic or any topic that you want to bring up. You know, it behooves us, and you know, Elliot, in our discussions in the last year, one thing comes up: we who have a particular I'm calling it a conservative African identity and want to project at least what I call sovereign thinking. I don't call it Brother Azaron, that we have interviewed here, which is one of the podcasts for those who haven't heard it, called sovereign thinking, that, you know, we who wish to come from the perspective of sovereign thinking know that we have to also grab and develop the minds of young people to understand the connection, like what's the connection, the historical connection between Haiti as a nation state and African Americans who want to self-govern, who want to control, at least demonstrate their ability to heal themselves by setting their own rules and trading with whom they wish to trade with for mutual benefit. If we don't get their minds, if we don't have no mechanism, and I'm saying, you know, those who call themselves Pan-Africanists, African nationalists, people who see themselves as Americans who fought Black Americans who fought from the Revolutionary War on, but realized that this country has been unjust to African people and need to, reshape. If we don't get the minds of young people to see the world differently than what the state has for it, then we're all doomed to be going along and leaving future generations to be even more confused, I think, if that made sense.
Yeah, again, we're in open forum. Callers got some things on their mind, they can join the conversation. You could do that by dialing 215-490-9832. Again, that's 215-490-9832. Richard, to add to the conversation, I got a few things I want to throw out there to kind of build on some of the things that we've talked about already. And here's something that I want the listening audience to kind of think about. And don't spend too much time thinking about it. You know, Malcolm said that this country we live in, this so-called democracy, is nothing but hypocrisy. And even in his Pledge of Allegiance, he don't say this is a democracy. He said this is a republic. Now, let's look at this. And like I said before, I could care less one way or the other. But I'm just doing this for the sake of clarity. Now, this week, I think that they've issued these articles of impeachment, or how they want to proceed with this impeachment trial of Trump. Let me read these. This first paragraph. It says the House impeachment managers charged Tuesday that former President Donald Trump is singularly responsible for inciting the insurrection at the Capitol last month. While Trump's legal team argues his speech was protected by the First Amendment and the Senate conviction would be unconstitutional, the dueling pretrial legal briefs from the House managers and Trump's lawyers detailed the major points that will be argued at next week's trial. It is the first real glimpse of Trump's new legal team's plans to defend him against the House impeachment vote from last month. Now, Richard, they're charging him with impeachment, with the insurrection. Hold on 1 second. Charging him with insurrection. Now, let's look at that for example. Let me read something here to the listening audience, which is kind of curious to me, but like I said, it doesn't really matter to me one way or the other. I'm just doing it so people can kind of look at what's happening. Now, I pulled up this article today. It's in USA Today. It says, Capitol riot arrests. See who's been charged across the country. And it mentions the number of people and who they are. Let me just read a little bit of this. This is dated today. Federal prosecutors continued to charge participants in the riot at the Capitol on January 6th, adding to dozens of arrests that took place in Washington, D.C. that day. The USA Today is gathering details on those cases and identify the people responsible for the attack that left 5 people dead and sent lawmakers like Mike Pence fleeing for shelter. Those arrested on charges have been filed since the riot, and those arrested by the Capitol Police, Metro Police. I just want to read some of these things here. Brian McCary, 33, was arrested. He's from Massachusetts. Knowingly entered a restricted area with intent to disrupt, disorderly conduct, and engaging in disorderly and disruptive conduct. Rachel Powell, 40 years old, from Pennsylvania. I think this is the one that stole Nancy Pelosi's laptop.
She wanted to go to Mexico.
Yeah.
Like, I'll come back to y'all later.
illegally entering restricted area. Disorderly conduct and illegally entering a restricted area. Kyle Fitzsimmons, 37. He was arrested. He's from Maine. Disorderly conduct. Troy Faulkner, 39, from Ohio. The same thing, disorderly conduct and assaulting an officer. Here's another guy. Now, it's just about 13 people here so far. Zachary Martin. Charges, entering restricted area of the Capitol, disorderly conduct, and demonstrating at the Capitol building without a permit. Peter Schwartz, knowingly entering into the restricted area of the Capitol, disorderly conduct on Capitol grounds. Jeffrey Grace, 61, knowingly entering a restricted area and restricted grounds without lawful authority. Jason Lee Hayward, knowingly entering restricted grounds on the Capitol, disorderly conduct on Capitol grounds. Kathleen Schaub, knowingly entering and remaining in a unlawful area, disorderly conduct on Capitol grounds. Ethan Nordine, knowingly entering and remaining in a restricted area and disorderly conduct on Capitol grounds. Zachary Jordan, destruction of government property, unlawful entry into a restricted area, and disorderly conduct. I guess he must have bust some windows. Troy Dillon Williams, entering a restricted area of the Capitol, intent to impede government business, disorderly conduct on Capitol grounds. The same thing. Several of these, all the rest of these cases, the same thing. Now, two things I notice in all of these cases, all of them is saying disorderly conduct and illegally entering the Capitol or restricted grounds. Now, I don't see murder here listed. Mm-hmm. I don't see insurrection listed on any of these charges. I think, I don't know, maybe it's a lawyer listening. I think insurrection can possibly lead to a death penalty or life in prison.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see insurrection listed in any of these charges. I don't see murder. You had a couple of cops killed, and one cop was bashed in his head. You know, even when you listen to the reports on MSNBC, CNN, when they did that cop that was killed laying in the rotunda, and everybody, you know, Pelosi and all of them was giving the eulogy, all the reports said the police officer that died in the Capitol riot, that died, you know, mm-hmm. gives you the impression that he was standing there, maybe had a heart attack or fell mm-hmm. over. They didn't say this man was bashed in his head with a metal fire extinguisher and his skull crushed. Mm-hmm. They didn't say that. He was viciously murdered in the insurrection. They don't say that. They try not to criminalize other white folks. I'm reading these charges. I don't see insurrection. I don't see murder.
Mm-hmm.
When MOVE was arrested in 78, when Rizzo and them went in that place, it was 9 MOVE members that was huddled in the basement. And that cop got killed, James Rant. Now, it comes out in the investigation a short while after that that the cop was killed by other police. They called it friendly fire. But they charge every one of those MOVE members in that MOVE 9 with 40 years of life for murder. You remember, Richard?
Right. Well, yeah.
I don't see none of these whites that was involved in this so-called Capitol insurrection charged with murder. If I'm the husband and wife and children of those white officers, I'd be highly upset. I'd be charging the Capitol. Who's paying for my dad getting his head bashed in? Nobody's charged. I'm just saying that to say the hypocrisy of these folks is just, our people don't need to be caught up in this dog and pony show. I don't care what they're talking about. I'm looking at charges, and I'm no lawyer. But check this out, Richard. And notice, even in this type of stuff, how skillfully they charge other white folks. Now, this says here, breaking and entering into a building is a felony under law. It's important to note that breaking and entering is different from the felony offenses of home invasion, as home invasion involves a home dwelling. It's also different from the misdemeanor offense of entering without permission or illegal entry, which involves a situation where there is no intention of committing a crime separate from entering a building without permission. Now, did you see that definition, Richard?
Yeah.
Now, illegal entry is a misdemeanor. Breaking and entering is a felony.
Mm.
But these white folks are charged with illegal entering the White House. When several of them went in there with the intention of hurting somebody, some of them had weapons, some of them had twist ties so they could arrest some folks. I don't know what they was planning to do with them. They bust windows. They stole stuff. They crapped on floors, walked in it, smeared it all around. I don't know what that's about. White folks is kind of strange with some of the behavior. Urinated on the floor. But they're charged with the misdemeanor of illegally entering the White House. That's a misdemeanor. They're not even charged with felonies, like breaking and entering. Why are you skillfully charging your folks? You don't want to criminalize them? Mm-hmm. But, I mean, that's just something for our people to consider.
You know, and can I use that to build on I'm going to call it another level, but the conclusion seems to be the same. You know, I was mentioning earlier about this Senate bill, and it, you know, you asked the question, well, did it go through the Congress? And it looks like it went through the Congress, Senate Bill 894, which started in March, right? The hearing about it, to authorize, dedicate domestic terrorism offices within the Department of Homeland Security, the Department of Justice, and the Federal Bureau of Investigation to analyze, monitor domestic terrorist activities and require the federal government to take steps to prevent domestic terrorism. Now, there was early on discussion, very, very early on, very brief. And as you say, I don't listen to that. So I get, you know, the little listening to each other, you know, that's how I hear things. And I think the discussion at first was, were they domestic terrorists, right? So here, since March 27th, 2019, it's the 116th Congress. And this is the thing that got me about this, because what their findings were, and the reason why they were discussing this. Congress finds the following: white supremacists and other far-right extremists are the most significant domestic terrorism threat facing the United States. That's one. Two, on February 22nd, 2019, a Trump administration United States Department of Justice official wrote in a New York Times op-ed that white supremacy and far-right extremists are among the greatest domestic security threat facing the United States. Regrettably, over the past 25 years, law enforcement or both the federal, state levels has been slow to respond, killing committed by individuals and group associated with far-right extremist groups have risen significantly. So even though, if I'm reading that right, even though these acts has occurred, these agencies are moving slowly to treat them in the manner if they were treating anybody else, right? And I think I hear you saying, in relationship to this charging for these acts, instead of making it a felony, they're charging them as a misdemeanor. But at first they're still, whether they're domestic terrorists or not. And then three, an April 2017 Government Accountability Office report on the significance legal threat posed by the domestic violent extremists explain
that since September 12, 2001, the number of fatalities caused by domestic violent extremists has ranged from 1 to 49 in a given year. If I'm not mistaken, what you're also raising, Elliot, is, well, this person, this officer, he didn't just bump into a fire extinguisher. Somebody bashed his head with a fire extinguisher. But the way it's being reported is not like somebody did that, right? Which would have been considered not only an officer, not only in the Capitol, would have been considered, if they deliberately did that, would have been considered a terrorist act. But that's not the way it's being reported. Fatalities resulting from attacks by far-right wing violent extremists have exceeded those caused by radical Islamist violent extremists in the 10 of the 15 years and were the same in the 3 of the years since September 12, 2001. Of the 85 violent extremist incidents that resulted in death since September 12, 2001, far-right violent extremist groups were responsible for 72.73%, while radical Islamic violent extremists were responsible for 23.27%. For, and I'll close with this as others, but you know, in the name of time, and go to the conclusion, because this was deliberate. These are the senators after the Congress passed this to the Senate. This bill, they were voting to, they should have voted to be able to put this legislation in place so that they could be able to create a department that would look after these here, what they, the report is saying, domestic terrorists, right? But an unclassified May 2017 Joint Intelligence Bulletin from the Federal Bureau of Investigation and the Department of Homeland Security found that white supremacist extremists pose a persistent threat of lethal violence, and the white supremacists were responsible for 49 homicides and 26 attacks from 2000 to 2016, more than any other domestic extremist movement. And I vividly remember that we were discussing last year about Black identity extremists, right? Mm-hmm. And it was a whole lot of discussion amongst congressmen and they named names of groups that were supposed to be Black. So this report goes on and it's detailing all the different acts. But then it gets, you know, what got me, Elliot, when it got down to, after all of this information, they got down to a vote, which was interesting. The Senate voted December 31st, 2020, and the vote failed.
Mm-hmm.
The vote failed. And then the vote failed by legislators at the Senate. And then January 6th, you have this event. Yeah, you know, well, I don't know if that makes any kind of connection. But
no, certainly it makes a connection. You know, listen, they know that these people are in law enforcement. They're in politics. They're supported by politics. They got PACs and everything else that support politicians. It's their brethren, the same way it was in the Civil War. It was their own brethren. We just read a couple of weeks ago, the Color Convention of 1864, when our ancestors said that they wanted these rebel soldiers to pay for what they did to Black soldiers that was captured during that Civil War, because they didn't hold them at no prison camp. They brutally murdered them.
Right.
Our ancestors wanted them to pay for it, but this government didn't. They didn't charge any of them. They let them go on back to wherever they was from. So it's the same thing now. These people that ran in the Capitol, I don't care what they say about them. If you look at the charges, none of them are charged with insurrection. None of them are charged with terrorism. And none of them are charged with murder. I'm looking at this thing of terror. Check this out, Richard. Now, I just read the thing about breaking and entering an illegal entry is a misdemeanor. Look at this. It says threats of terrorism is considered a felony of second degree. Anybody convicted of that can face up to 15 years in prison. Now, that's threats of terrorism. These people bust in the White House or the Capitol with intentions of getting their hands on some elected officials. That's not a threat of terrorism. That's a terrorist act. Mm-hmm. None of these people are charged with terrorism. None of them are charged with insurrection. None of them are charged with murder. This ain't nothing but a show. Our people don't need to get caught up in listening and watching this foolishness. It's foolishness.
But you know, Elliot, the thing that, you know, maybe I agree with you in the sense of how they're playing it to us, right? And I can read into it why, like you said, bringing up, you know, the Civil War. Before the Civil War, most of the generals and captains, they were all in, what is that? The Army, Navy, the Academy. What they call West Point. Mm-hmm. They were all in West Point. They were all cadets. The only thing changed was they put on different color uniform. They had a oath that they took while they were training. Right? So the reason I think this is important for us, at least to be conscious, because we cannot idly think to watch this as a show. Because their reports are saying these guys are serious. And we only have history, a personal history as a group, because the KKK was serious. And they were also, they make it like they were hooligans, but they were a part of that grouping, right? And we have to engage we have to create the dialogue, because we have to prepare, we talked earlier about that next generation, to understand the environment we live in or we set ourselves up. That's what it seems to me.
You know, we'll take a break, and when we come back, there's a few people on the line, and I know they might want to add something to the discussion. You know, before we break, Richard, because I want to kind of continue this after the break. Let me read two paragraphs here from this article that was just released today. While and out to return after Nick Cannon reconciles with Viacom. Nick Cannon has reconciled with Viacom CBS. The media conglomerate has reestablished its relationship with Cannon after he was fired for making anti-Semitic statements last summer. According to Variety magazine, the move comes after Cannon made amends by apologizing for his comments and partnering with Jewish leaders. Nick has not only apologized, but taken responsibility for his comments. But he has also worked to educate himself and others through engagement with Jewish leaders and on his platforms, says the MTV Entertainment Group spokesman. Those efforts are of the utmost importance, and that's why we've invited him to rejoin our team. Now, some folks might say, well, how is that important? Well, again, some folks are playing checkers, while sometimes we play chess, or while sometimes we're not even aware of conversations going on. Now, we see here that the things that they took from Cannon, he's getting back. Mm-hmm. Now, let me read this letter written to, it was in the Jewish Wish Light. It's some type of Jewish publication. It was from a rabbi, Noam Moranz. And it's entitled, I Spoke to Nick Cannon About Anti-Semitism, and This Is What I Learned. Now, let me, I want the listening audience to listen to this, what he stated, and he's saying it to his own. It was in the Jewish publication about a Cannon. Now, let me, I'm going to take some of this down before we take a break. Teaneck, New Jersey. I didn't know who Nick Cannon was until he said horribly hurtful things about my people. Mm-hmm. I know that he's very big celebrity and enormous numbers of people listen to him and respect him. That's unlike some who say hurtful things. He's not someone who can simply be dismissed. More importantly, there was a possibility that something good could emerge from engaging him, and it has. In other incidents of celebrities expressing anti-Semitic comments, Cannon did not follow that pattern. He has issued a series of apologies in his own unique style. Cannon dedicated a good part of the past month to learning more about Jews and Judaism. He understands why his words were blatantly anti-Semitic and has begun the process of undoing the damage he has caused. The same perch was used for evil is now going to be used for good. Along the way, Cannon started to follow the American Jewish Committee on social media as a part of his education. As a result, the American Jewish Committee met with him a few times. We felt confident enough about his journey to feature him with me on American Jewish Online Advocacy Everywhere. America Jewish Online Advocacy Anywhere. His first appearance on a Jewish program. But first, in our private conversations, I learned that Cannon is sincere and credible. He did not knowingly hurt others. He's not interested in overnight conversations, but rather a spiritual and intellectual journey. He does not go along to get along. He needs to understand and draw his own conclusions. Although he has strong beliefs, Cannon is willing to admit he's wrong. These qualities bode well for a process of leading us to a better place. Well, I'll keep on going because I, you know, it's in this conversation here, it's really, you really got to pay close attention. Much of our coverage, much of our public conversations focused on what Cannon, and his process of atonement. There was some disappointment and pushback when he rejected Louis Farrakhan's hate speech, but did not reject the minister himself. Some might find that automatically disqualifies in considering Cannon as a partner in a fight against anti-Semitism and racism, and in advancing Black Jewish relations. But atonement is a process, and we believe that he has demonstrated or is demonstrating enough credibility to allow the process to unfold. Why is engaging Cannon important? Something is awfully wrong and disturbing when a Howard University School of Divinity doctoral student who is a celebrity, who has a celebrity reach, erroneously believes the worst stereotypes and conspiracy theories about Jewish people and mistakenly suggests that Jews usurp Black people in the name of culture of Hebrews. When his innumerable fans hear these anti-Semitic slanders, many believe their own problematic ideas reinforced. But when Cannon changes his mind publicly because he's unlearned falsehoods and learned truth, as he has, the same many will be educated by him and also may change their own beliefs. Responsible Jewish leaders do not have the luxury of missing this opportunity. If we allow ourselves to be frozen in a cancel culture and that does not give Cannon a chance to reach his people, we should be condemned by our own people who we supposed to be leading. What, for example, does the process look like in this case? An example among many could be cited. One can visit Nick Cannon's social media platform and read his latest series of book reports, including his recent reviews on Barry Weiss, How to Fight Anti-Semitism, and Simon Wiesenthal's The Sunflower on the Possibility of Forgiveness and the positive impact of Cannon's teaching his followers in his new ways is incalculable. You hear that, Richard?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I want that to sink into our listening audience.
You're definitely sinking into me. Stabbing me, really.
Somebody's playing chess while others might be playing checkers or not even be aware. Again, let me read this closing paragraph before I take a break. It says, why is engaging Cannon important? Something is awfully wrong and disturbing when a Howard University School of Divinity doctoral student who is a celebrity and has celebrity reach erroneously believes the worst stereotypes and conspiracy theories about Jewish people and mistakenly suggests that Jews usurp black people in the name of culture of Hebrews. When his innumerable fans hear these anti-Semitic slanders, many believe their own problematic ideas enforced. But when Cannon changes his mind publicly because he's unlearned falsehoods and learned truths, he has, in the same way we'll be educating him, he'll also change his mind and his beliefs and cause them to change their mind and their beliefs. Responsible Jewish leaders do not have the luxury to miss this opportunity. If we allow ourselves to be frozen in a cancel culture that does not give Cannon a chance to reach his people, we should be condemned by our people who we supposedly are leading. And now, Richard, we see where he gets his program back because he's apologized. He's meeting the standards that they according to this letter by this rabbi, they met with him on several occasions. And even though it's a little pushback, they figured that the gamble is good enough for them to take, according to what he's saying.
Mm-hmm.
Now, not only that, did they give him his program back. Here's another article that, and it's come out a couple of days ago, that 170 executives launched a new Black Jewish Entertainment Alliance. A joint initiative of Black Jewish in the entertainment industry devoted to countering racism and anti-Semitism. And then they put up several black folks' names that are involved. Cannon is one of them. And there's some others listed here. Some of the names I might go in after the break. Now, keep in mind that last month, Richard, they had that large Jewish pack had that dinner. And Ice Cube was the keynote speaker. You remember?
Mm-hmm.
Now, all of a sudden, we see this alliance that has been signed a couple days ago by all these black entertainers. Now, what type of, you know, usually when somebody signs an alliance, you bringing something to the table and I'm bringing something to the table and we kind of put it together. Now, to these black entertainers, these Jewish folks got the money and the connections. So that's what they're all striving for. Money seems to be some black folks' God. But what do they figure that you bring to the table? I mean, what's on their mind? Do some of these blacks even consider that? Besides the immense talent that our people have, whether it's in sports, entertainment, they can be used in politics to reach other people. You see what happened in Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
To our people to be used. Sure, that's something that's obvious. We see that. Black folks looking can see that. Some that ain't looking don't see it. They just see black faces and doing things, what they consider doing big things. But black people that are looking behind the scenes see black folks being used. And here we're going to see more black folks being used for a purpose.
And he put it in there to be able to bring the change. If he changed his mind, he'll change the minds of his people.
Yeah, notice he said his people. He's not talking about everybody. And he said his people. His people. He said, we can't. Now, he was talking to other Jewish mm-hmm. folks when he said, we can't allow ourselves to be frozen in cancel culture that does not give Canada a chance to reach his people. Then we should be condemned by our people who we supposedly are leading. When he say our people, he's talking about other Jews.
Younger ones.
Yeah. Come on, I just shoot. Come on. Come on here. Let's we're gonna take a break. When we come back, we'll take a few calls. If somebody wants to get involved in the conversation, you can do that by dialing 215-490-9832. Again, that's 215-490-9832. Time for an awakening. We'll be right back.
Listening to Time for an Awakening, Time for an Awakening, with host Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services if when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Escape the digital plantation. Abibitumi.com, Abibitumi.tv, Abibitumi.tv.com, Abibitumi.store are here for you. You are ready to be free of non-African social media. Don't run from danger, run to safety. Abibitumi.com is here for you. You are ready to be free of digital plantations to control your own products. Abibitumi.store is here for you. ABIBITUMI, Black Power, ABIBITUMI. The only word you need to know to join your global Commit You Black family, to join your interconnected Commit You Black communities. Escape the digital plantation now at bbtumi.com, at bbtumi.tv, at bbtumitv.com, at bbtumi.store. We are here for you. Escape the digital plantation.
That this problem needs to be solved, and we can't keep relegating it to generation after generation because a few of us got a little money, a few of us got positions, a few of us have wealth, while the masses of our people are going steadily down. No one man can rise above the condition of his people. The brother said responsibility. Is it that we should let them take responsibility to do for us, or should we pool the knowledge that's at the table, the power that's in our community, the wealth that's in our community to change the harsh reality of black life in America? We have to do the job of fulfilling the black agenda. Thank you.
Have a message to the black man, because the black man today is a man who has been made now almost into a laughing stock. Nobody takes the black man serious. We are just used to be somebody's tool. We are the sportsmen, we're the singers and the dancers, and we're also labeled as the pimps and the criminals and the drug dealers and the killers and the vagabonds of society. We're the bogeymen of British society and other Western systems. And we want to dispel that lie and destroy those myths and put the black man back on the map where we belong. Who is the black man? The black man is the original man. If it wasn't for the black man, no other men could be on this planet. We are the fathers of humanity. We gave birth to all of you.
Watchman on the wall. You are too. You watch with a political eye. We watch from a spiritual eye. But we're supposed to be the watchman for the people that vote for us. The sad thing is the people vote, but they don't give you the money to run your campaigns. So here come big business.
How are you? How are you, Judge? How are you, Alderman? How are you, Congressman? How are you? How are you, Reverend? Well, what can I do for you today, Reverend?
You can't do nothing for me. See, that's what we got to be careful of. We got to be careful of who we bow down to. But see, when you get in your congregation and you talk this Jesus, this powerful Jesus that's sitting at the right hand of the Father with all power in his hand, then you go with your hat in your hand to the governor, to the mayor, to the president, begging for some crumbs. You have sold your God cheap.
the white man downtown disrespect all of us.
Yeah.
Time for an Awakening is a proud part of the Black Talk Radio Network, the number one independent black digital and podcasting platform.
Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. It's 9:19 in the city of Philadelphia. We're in Freestyle Friday mode here on Time for an Awakening. Anything that's on your mind, you can give us a call. We'll talk about it. You can do that by dialing 215-490-98. 3-2. We got a couple calls on the line here, Rich. Let's go to 267. 267?
Yes, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Let's start with, you got two good subjects here. Let's start with Nick Cannon, right? And I see what the Jews have, but you know, Brother Elliot and Richard and Elliot, that when you're organized as a people, black people who can concerned about their neighborhoods, their community, and the destiny and future of what our plight is as being in existence in America and all over the globe, you have an organization or many organizations that first look at the situation of a Nick Cannon. See, Jews can pull Nick Cannon to the carpet, and people who employ him can say, I'm going to pull that check. You know, Elliot, if, for instance, if you and I and Richard and the people that we know that are conscious in the United States of America, the ones that you probably know more of because you have your radio station, if we were all together and we were to say to Nick Cannon, before anybody critiques your behavior, which you do, our organization is put you to the carpet because you interviewed Kanye West when he said he was running for the president of the United States and the Republicans helped to set him up to run, to go against something that looked like it was going to help black people. And the first thing you say to Nick Cannon is, Nick Cannon, you interviewed a man who said that Harriet Tubman didn't free any slaves. All she did was take it from one group to the next. First of all, when you have him, when you supposed to have him, first thing you say is, we don't care about your billionaire status and who you know. We got 10 things on you, and guess what? You don't want nobody to hear about it, do you? And when you get people like that and you have things on them, it's called shutting them up. See, they're able to do that to him. And see, Kanye West talks against his own people. He don't talk against them because they have something on him. And in these organizations, you do it. You know, matter of fact, they have this movie coming out with Jim Brown, Muhammad Ali, and Malcolm X and Sam Cooke. I can't look at it because of Jim Brown. Because of Jim Brown. Right. So my thing is that a Jim Brown, a Kanye West, a Shaq, any of these people that step out of line, you correct them. Because guess what? If other people could do it, then you can do it too. That's when you're organized, right? Now, I want to talk about the impeachment. Now, you did some good research, Elliot. You got a good mind. But in an impeachment trial, there's another side. Now, if those impeachment managers do their homework, you and I know that some common sense says when it comes to they broke in a government capitol building. One, there were at least five murders. Two, they had weapons, stun gun, knife, tie, and guess what? Pipe bomb. See, when you there's another side when you're in the courtroom. Now, is this in a courtroom, or is it a, like you said, the dog and the pony show? Because if Trump didn't give them the order, they would never attack it. Now, in the eyesight of the wise, he should be convicted, and none of them should walk. Now, we will see how the other side does it. See, there's another side. And the trial is coming up. And Elliot, no. I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just saying I want to see what's going to go on. And I'm not saying you're wrong. And I don't think they're going to convict Trump. And those people, they slapped him on the wrist. That's all I'm saying. Now, how do you stop it? Elliot, you and I always say, they like his style. That's all to it.
Well, you want me to respond to something that you said?
Yeah, we should do it. Start with Nick. Start with that piece of trash. And, you know, I mean, piece of trash, because don't let them just move it on over and now suddenly you're looking at them on television. Stop supporting them people. They mean you no good. You know what I mean? They clowns, buffoons, man.
Well,
you know, they're the worst things out. Listen to me. In media. And that's what we look at. What else does he do for his people? All this kind of stuff. And you and I know, listen to me, that he's going to bow down to who's giving him a check. But you know what, though, Elliot? When you organize, you can stop all that madness.
Listen, I understand that, but the only thing is this: let's look at that. What happened to him, and take some responsibility.
Right.
And Richard, I want you to kind of weigh in because I'd like to hear your thoughts on this. Now, let me hold on a second to give a little clarity, because this thing was blew up because of. What he said took less than 2 minutes, and I'll read it, what he said, because he and Professor Griff was on a podcast that Cannon made, and this is what was stated that kind of started the whole firestorm. It says on his podcast, Nick Cannon and Professor Richard Griffin, Professor Griff, former hip-hop public enemy, discuss racial bias. He and Professor Griff said that black people were the true Hebrews and Jews usurped their identity. Cannon said, when we are the people, we are the same people who they want to be. That's our birthright. We were the true Hebrews. The rapper then discussed skin color and claimed that people without melanin live in fear. I'm going to say this carefully. I'm going to say this carefully, he begins, to allege that people who lacked sufficient melanin were a little less. Those without dark skin have a deficiency that historically forced them to act out of fear and commit acts of violence to survive. They had to be savages, Nick says, adding that he was referring. Now, this is the author of this article saying, he was referring to Jewish people, to white people, to Europeans, among others.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he didn't add that part. He made those comments that I just read. That people with less melanin acted out of fear and committed acts of violence to survive. They had to be savages, Nick says, adding and referring to what the author says, Jewish people, white people, Europeans, among others. But what really started the firestorm is when he said that black folks were the true Hebrews or the original Hebrews. So when these remarks were stated, to me, this is my personal opinion. I want yours, Richard. I think he was left out a little hung out to dry there. People could have came to his defense. Now, the brother that calls from Brooklyn, Jay, mentioned that he's good friends with Carr down there at Howard. And people could have came to his defense. Now, Minister Farrakhan came to his defense because he said some things in reference to it. But I didn't hear anybody else come to his defense. Now, we had a program here on Time for an Awakening, you know, for the folks that listen. When we had historians, one from the continent that happens to be Hebrew, that gave a historical account to what he said to add some history to it. So if they wanted a dialogue based on the comment that Nick said, they can have a dialogue and produce historians, Jewish historians, and have black folks produce historians. We're not devoid of knowledge. We have people out there that know the histories of peoples around the world and the origins of peoples around the world. They're not the only ones that know it. They don't have a monopoly on that. If they wanted a dialogue, they could have it. But to call that young man in, and I'm not going to say he's no this, that, and the other, to call that young man in, put him on the carpet, rake him over the coals, because in his mind is his desire to have money. And they're waving it in front of his face until you apologize, you're not going to get this back, so he capitulates. Well, but if they wanted an honest dialogue, they could have it. They don't want no honest dialogue based on what he said.
Yeah. Elliot, can I say something? Elliot, the dialogue would have been good. It would have brought out some things that are important that you and I know that other people don't even know. And if they heard it from our mouths, they wouldn't care anyway. But the other
About them caring. I don't care less about what they care.
I know.
Wait a minute. Hold it. Hold on a second. You heard those Jews say in that letter from the rabbi that it was important for his people to hear this. See, that's what they're concerned about. They already know what he said is based on facts. But they don't want that. They don't want young black people knowing, hearing that, and perpetuating those understandings, because it might start causing them to start searching for other things.
I agree with that. Elliot, you're perfectly right with that. But look at where Nick Cannon's coming from. And the thing is that needs to come out on the truth. But he ain't really worth it. What I'm saying to you,
well, I don't agree with that.
What I mean by that, no, you're right about that, on who the original people are on that. But my thing is, at the same time, don't be downing your people for them too. See, in other words,
you're mixing apples and oranges.
But the same thing, you can't go against.
You're mixing apples and oranges. You're talking about Kanye West. I'm talking about Nick Cannon.
I'm telling you that Nick Cannon interviewed Kanye West when he was running for president. And Kanye West has said in the past about Harriet Tubman and our people. So in other words, you connected, coming to his rescue for that is good. But you don't hook up with them other Negroes who go and you make it out of a joke. And I don't like no Kanye West, but he swings with him and he talks to him and he interviews him. And at that point, he ain't with us when it comes to protecting his people fairly. You don't interview a motherfucker. Excuse me. You don't interview an MF-er like that. And I know what you're saying. I'm with that. But those guys can't be going back and forth. You with your people or not?
Well, I'm with you on that. You know, it's interesting. And Ellie, though I understand what you're saying in relationship to, you know, the whole thing of Hebrew, African being Hebrew, but I think that the crux, the thing that sticks in my mind, and I'm stuck on what that rabbi said, in the sense of, because look what they did.
Mm-hmm.
They said they got to control his mind so he can control their mind.
Exactly.
Right? And yes. He said that he has the power to control their minds.
Their minds.
But we, because both of those sides, whether African people are Hebrew or whether whites operating out of fear, are really irrelevant.
Mm-hmm.
What's relevant from a power perspective is that he has the ability to control their mind, and they don't want him operating. They want him to operate under the context of the way they want him to operate and controlling our minds.
Yes.
And our minds is next generation, because not only he controls our mind, and what that rabbi said, you know, telling those other ones, don't be foolish. He controls our children's minds too. So if you don't get a control over his mind and the direction it's going to do, then not only will be dealing with the consequences of him controlling his people mind and our people mind too.
Well, he didn't add that part.
But that's when he said, you know, telling them that they don't be fooled, you know, don't waste this opportunity. And I think the way that phrasing, that's why I'm contextualizing it that way. He's telling, the rabbi is telling these other rabbis, like, look, if we can't be foolish and just nix him and let him go, because if we do, he'll have control over his people mind, and we'll be dealing with that as leaders of our people.
So can I say something? I'm gonna say this to you though. But how loyal and feral is a Nick Cannon? Because guess what? He'll flip
that
on
part,
you.
That part, I understand. I understand that part, and you know, I don't. You know, and I understand.
He'll flip on you.
But for those people who relate to Nick Cannon or the other person that you bring up, their minds ain't where we are, and I'm assuming their minds, those people, their minds aren't where we are anyway. So the issue is not about whether Kanye is mischaracterizing, General Harriet Tubman or not, you know, because those people who are dinner, and you see, Kanye went through his process, and you see he got, and there wasn't a large number, but he got a it's a sizable number of people that I think he created a church, mm-hmm. you know, and I think one of the numbers I seen, he had 50,000 people,
mm-hmm.
right? So there's a group of people who think like that. That's not the issue about Elliot, from what I hear you saying, in the relationship to these people who are dealing with chess, because they pulled his wealth making, because all that's symbolic. They pulled his wealth making, like, that means that those people are in a line with the rabbi also.
Mm-hmm.
Because the rabbi said, well, now because he did a report for us, we done talked to him, and we are convinced that he's okay. And we got to do a little trust, but we convince he's okay. And because of that, give him his stuff back.
Yeah. And then he can help us. That's the key. He can help us.
Let's get some chess. Let's move with the knight and the rook. Okay. And let's move with the pawn. When you on the chessboard, what is it that he has that you can control? Because he's control. How do we grab him and use our moves to get the queen and the king?
And the thing is, in our strategy, which you can't operate from the other side of the chessboard, because you got to use that rook. It's your rook, your knight, your pawn, and your strategy. The question is, see, when we engage these conversations, we're operating on the other side of the chessboard. Yeah. We're playing the other guy's game. The question is, what control do we have over our knight, our rook, our pawn?
Exactly.
And what strategy are we operating?
See, when we organize, when you organize and you got your team, then right. you work. And guess what? Listen, the message said he don't have no new tricks. He's been using the same tricks all the time. So you gotta understand his game. We've been in it long enough and have a better move, a better game, a better plan. And they can, let me tell you something, man. These Uncle Toms can't be had. Let's be for real.
I'll stop.
And guess what? And the enemy can't be defeated. Have that in your mind.
I stop with this, though, because even in the way we are projecting, we're still projecting like we don't have control, because that's the question we have to answer. We have to answer. Do we have control over our knight, our rook? Because we keep talking about their queen, their king, their bishop, and what their king, their queen, and their bishop, and their knights, and their rooks are doing. But we're not talking about how we're moving our knight. We're not talking about how we have positioned our pawn to hold in check that bishop. We're not talking that. We're talking about what that bishop is doing, or how that bishop has taken our pawn. And until we get our thinking right, Which means until we get our side of the chessboard under our control, we'll always be talking about what they doing.
And right, but the other side, Richard, is that, and then when you get him had, you make an example out of him. And then you move on to the next one. Because the game don't stop. Matter of fact, you got to get over the game. Whatever it is, guess what? It can be done, and it can, and you, they can be had. Because, Richard, guess what? All we got is each other. And we got to get the ones that move with us to move.
Thanks for your contribution, man.
Right. It's always a pleasure. Thanks for calling me. Right. Come on. It was great.
Let's go to 602. 602.
Yes, brothers. Good evening, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard, Brother Marcus here.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing all right, good brothers. You know, it shouldn't surprise me that they, that Haribo, you know, because that Haribo has been in our life for a very long time. Since ancient time, that Haribo has been, you know, interfering in our business. And if you look at the setup today, they have a, they exercise a lot of control on our people, you know, in the entertainment industry, in the football, basketball, music, you know, cinema, you know, they exercise a lot of power. And we see them, you know, what happened in Georgia there, you know, it's a Jew and a black, you know, team up. So these people are slick. They're like, you know, these people, they have been, they have, yes, stolen our legacy. It's a stolen legacy. They stole our wealth, right? Because who was in South Africa digging all them diamonds down in Namibia, Sierra Leone, who was it? Oppenheimer, De Beers, Jews, our wealth. See? So yes, the brother tell the truth, you know, but, you know, he's a young brother. The sad thing is, you know, they're going to destroy him anyway. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the way they operate. You see, once you capitulate, that's it.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
they're going to destroy you in the end anyway. See? So he should have just stood his ground and say, you know what, let me go try something for myself. You see? But he capitulate and they go and get him. In the end, they go and get him because they got to make an example out of him. Say, don't do that again to the rest of the niggas. You got to know what's going to happen to you. You know? But I am hopeful, more optimistic for our people. You know what I think? We need systems. That's what we need, systems. We have to develop systems that we could use to garner capital. Because that is our main problem now. We have the capital, but we don't have the system in place to garner. I mean, a simple, if you have 50,000 people, this is simple mathematics, the magic of numbers, 50,000 people contributing 20 cents a day consecutively for 100 days, it's $1 million. Just straight up math. 20 cents a day. If you have a system where I look, I got 50,000 people here, and these 50,000 people going to commit to 20 cents each day for 100 days. We say we need $1 million in 100 days. That's how it's done. So that's where we got to start thinking to get our economic house. Ain't nobody going to give us nothing. Ain't no reparations. That ain't coming. We got to have some power to get some reparations. No, what I see, and I, you know, I keep my ear to the ground and I look and see what's going on. No, you see, these people realize, you know, there is a movement to the motherland taking place, okay? They don't show it on TV, okay? But it's taking place. And all of a sudden now they start doling out money. Doling, oh, we're going to come with stimulus and we're coming with child credit and this and that, food stamp and everything. See? Because they know that if that herd, if you start to get a stampede to the motherland, it's over. And they see it, so they're trying to head it off at the pass, but it's too late. It's too late, my friend. You see, God, this is like nature. Once it open, it open. Once the flow starts, you can't stop it. So, don't keep looking here for your salvation. Ain't no salvation here for you. Fight, yes, but have an exit strategy. Because, look, if these folks here, look, that family up there, they was fighting, you know, on January 6th. That's family, okay? Them people, family, okay? So, you don't really rest in each other. That's family, man. See? So, look, exit strategy. Anyway, good brothers, that's all I got to say today. Brother Elliot, I need to reach out to you too. I'm going to give you a call, all right?
The information that you sent me, Brother Marcus, I want to kind of follow up with you on it.
Yes, so I'll give you a call tomorrow.
All right. Thank you for all your right. contribution.
All right, brother.
Take care now.
Let's go to 215. 215.
Good evening, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. How y'all two good brothers doing tonight?
How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine. All praise be to Allah. Elliot, I don't know where to begin, man. Once again, Brother Elliot, you and Richard, y'all been much provocative, much stimulating. I mean, y'all got my mind in going in like so many directions. Y'all got such a hot topics and very intriguing topics that stimulate the mind and body and soul tonight. But first, let me say to my dear Brother Marcus, who just called. Brother Marcus used the term, they was up there fighting. There was families fighting up there on January the 6th when they had the so-called insurrection, as they call it. But you know what, Brother Marcus is hit the nail on the head, Elliot, because the quote you, Brother Elliot, but then when you said as many times, Elliot, they was fighting their brethren. Is that an accurate term?
Yeah.
So basically, Brother Marcus was saying the same thing you said, Elliot, and I concur with both of y'all brothers. That they was fighting their brethren, you know, because, and it's going to continue to happen, but it's just the first of many in fighting, because like you said, Elliot, this man's system is falling down before his eyes, right before his eyes. And so you're going to see their white brethren fighting the other white brethren, kind of like the Civil War, but just kind of like a kind of different kind of twist, but same mindset, nothing changed there, you know. But before I get deep into the Jewish situation, Elliot, and the and tying everything together with the January the 6th insurrection, I'm sure you and Brother Richard and Brother Marcus and Brother Timothy and everybody and all the time for me listening to this have seen previews. I mean, Tim brought up about the one night in Miami and stuff. You know, of course, the thing about Sam Cooke, Jim Brown, Muhammad Ali, and Malcolm X. See, only thing I would differ with Tim on with Jim Brown, I'm not going to throw Jim under the bus because Jim did a lot for our people, man. You know, Jim got older now. He, you know, who knows? He might be suffering the effects of you know, he's of advanced age and stuff. So some of them brothers, you know, they get up in age, like Brother Jason Bahaki Mabuti. You know, he's been. I don't trash him. Even though I disagree with the statement he made about the white man is not our enemy. And when he had for years saying the white man has a perpetual enemy, so I'm not going to dog him out because he don't. See, now, and the point I'm making, Brother Ellie Richard, is that. Because a brother says or sister say something late in their age where they're getting older, I may disagree, but I'm not going to throw them under the bus. Because, in other words, neither Jim Brown the brother has a history of being like Hakeem Mabuti. Neither one of them have a history of being Clarence Thomas. That's what I'm basically trying to say. Because they're by their work. You know, encompasses that. So even though they may have said some things as they get older that I definitely totally disagree with, I'm not going to put them in the league with the Clarence Thomas, if you understand what I'm saying. So I think what they have did survived the test of time. So I'm not, you know, unless they go totally, you know, off chains and stuff, but then I'll revisit it. But again, I'm not going to, you know, totally throw those brothers under the bus because they did too much good for our people, Hakeem Mabuti as well as Jim Brown, you know. But again, before I talk about all these other things, I'm sure you and Rich have seen that the preview of the movie, the Hollywood always produced, because like you said, if we don't tell our story, it's not going to get told right. I'm sure y'all been seeing the previews of Judas and the Black Messiah. And you notice when they show the previews of the movie, which for people that are not familiar with Brother Joe Sanders, about the movie about Fred Hampton's life and the Black Panthers and the betrayal. And if you notice when they show the preview on TV, they pinpoint that instance where that Negro who may have set up Fred Hampton and gave, you know, directions to the house or maps of the house and everything, which led to Fred Hampton and Mark Clark's demise and stuff like that. They kept emphasizing what the guy said. The white boy sitting there smiling, the devil, he's sitting there smiling. Yeah, and so the brother, you know, in his moment of weakness, because he's so he wants that prestige and the dollar, because like you said, it's sad that so many of our people get caught up in the dollar, that they'll betray their own mother in some cases. So he's saying, you want me to get close to Fred and stuff. And so the white boy's up there smiling with his little fat face that's smiling away and saying, Negro, you know what you got to do. And so, of course, he ultimately betrays Fred Hampton. And you can see him up there when Fred's speaking and everything with all the powerful speeches. He's sitting up there with his beret on and knowing at the same time he's nothing but a sellout and stuff. You see, now, Elliot, how do Negroes live with themselves, man? I mean, you took the money from this white man, you whatever position you got, was it worth your soul? As they say in the Bible, Brother Ellen Richard, who is the man to gain the world but lose his soul? You know what I'm saying? So you may have got a few $100, $2,000, and even though I know he didn't get no million, but let's just say for the sake of argument, he got a couple million out the FBI or this system for betraying Fred Hampton and ultimately leading to his demise. Brother, you know, is it worth it? So you gotta look at yourself at nighttime and look at that and stuff. Know what you did. You gotta look yourself in the mirror. And I know you can't be happy with the reflection that you see back, because all the damn money in the world can't buy you the pride and dignity, man. Okay, how many damn Cadillacs you buy or whatever you want to get with that materialistic stuff, it can't ease the soul, your pain and stuff, man. And I give a good example, Brother Ellie and Richard, what I'm saying. I don't know if you and Richard heard about the Black police officer in Louisiana that took his own life the other day. Did y'all hear anything about that case?
Yeah.
Well, he had took his life because he said he even made videos where he said he was just so it just bothered him because he said he trying to be Black and blue at the same time, you know. And he said how it was hard because he said he watching white cops abusing people that look like him, knowing that could be not himself, it could be his son. It could be his father, his uncle, his brother, his nephew, whatever. And he's saying, I'm sitting back watching it over the years, these cops just brutalizing people, look, and I'm not doing anything about it. You know what I'm saying? See, that's the kind of stuff. See, my point, Ellen Rich, is that, again, who is the man to gain the world but lose your soul? I mean, you know, you making a salary, you're doing all these things, but you don't have the moral fortitude to stand up and just do the right thing. Nobody asked you to be no Superman. Just do the right thing. So that Negro that betrayed Fred Hampton and Mark Clark, was it worth to him? Was it worth those trinkets in the end? You know, you caused this man's untimely death at a young age, took him away from his wife and his children and stuff. Was it worth it, Nick, brother? I mean, you asked, was it worth it, man? That's why all these traders got to ask themselves, is it worth it, man? You know what I mean? And that's why we go back with Nick Cannon and stuff. Again, a brother, he just spoke the truth. He didn't say advocate killing anyone. And like you said, that's what the whole thing. See, they always throw all this other stuff in as a side attraction. But them so-called Zionists is upset because they don't like the fact that he said Black people was the true Hebrew Israelite. That's what got them upset. And you draw a parallel, Elliot. That was the same reason why he got upset with Sean Jackson. He said if they knew that we was the chosen people, they wouldn't keep doing all these things. See, that's what got them upset. See, they don't like the truth because they know young minds are fertile. And this is what these Zionists are afraid of. That's why he said reaching your people. He said not. He basically said take the hate. He said don't be a cancel culture. Not because he don't want to cancel Nick Cannon. He would love to, but it's not about canceling him out now because he knows Nick Cannon's in a position that if he go this way, he can go either X left or right. If he go the other way, he could start get his some moral fortitude. He could start reaching young Black people and have young Black people saying, hey, man, these people have us as slaves. They wasn't no friends of ours. All this talk about they was friends of us in the civil rights struggle when they were spying on us, Joe Springham from the NAACP. See, black folks, young black people got fertile minds. They'll start looking at all those things. That's what they're afraid of. Because like you said, like, these people play chess while we play checkers, man. They see the long-term ramifications if they don't get Nick Cannon back in place, what can happen. And like Brother Marcus correctly said, they definitely going to do amen because they definitely, because they very slammed. They don't mind getting a few checkers now because they know they got him where they want him at, and if he don't stand up for himself, they're going to ultimately destroy him. Because, and Elliot, and I say this to you and Richard clearly, you know, when you made that comment, Elliot, when you said that, when Brother Nick said, well, I denounce Minister Farrakhan's hate speech, but I don't denounce the minister himself. And that's what the rabbi said. He was, you know, he didn't like it. He claimed he was okay with that. But no, he's not okay with it, because ultimately, they not going to be satisfied till he denounce the minister himself. See, I know how these Zionists work. I've watched how they operate, especially when they come to black people. They ain't just stopping it. No, he denounced his red minister Farrakhan's so-called rhetoric. They want him to, they not gonna give him a total pass until he come on radio, TV, or release a statement denouncing the minister himself. That's the way they roll. They don't let up when it comes to black people. And I close these last couple of comments to Brother Jeff. Some else to get on. See, Elliot, when you said the other day, you made a...
Let me say this in reference to what you said.
Sure.
According to this rabbi in the published report, in his letter on this Jewish wish light, he said that... atonement is a process, and we believe that he has demonstrated enough credibility to allow the process to unfold. So they don't agree that he didn't denounce him, just like you said. But they figure, well, let's see, let's just play out, because in their mind they can still pull a rug out whenever they get ready.
Exactly.
And the thing is about The fear is the control he has on other minds. That's the critical point. And I think that because on the other side, and as you say, Elliot, the fear is what the control he has on that side, but they are confident of the control they have on him.
On him, exactly. Mm-hmm.
Question that, you know, we got to start begging ourselves is, why we don't have no control on him or them, whether it's the other rapper or Elliot or those other entertainers. We have, and we might only be 2 out of 10, but we have no control over them to where they will have to make a decision, because they ain't got to make no decision right now. They just got to respond to who got control over them.
Mm-hmm.
Them. But we're talking like we got control over them, and we're watching them have control over him. And that's because when they got control over him, they got control over all the people he got control over. That means we have no control over all the people he have control over. And shouldn't we be concerned about that?
Well, that's why I wanted your opinion, Richard, And when I mentioned about that, I think that as a whole, I think we dropped the ball when Cannon was attacked.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Because we got enough historians, just like they got so-called historians, we got enough historians to justify and put some meat up. Listen, Nick Cannon is not a historian.
Mm-hmm.
He was saying things that he understood from other people. We got enough historians out there that can back up what he said and more. But they didn't come out as a whole in dispute. They let him be attacked out there and nobody said anything. And I go back to what Brother Jay said out of Brooklyn when he said that Carr didn't even, you know, you got to come to this man's aid. You can't just let him swing in the breeze, because these people going to castigate. It's just like Cynthia McKinney gave that example of Kunta Kinte being whipped and forced to say his name is Toby, and dozens of people just standing there watching.
Exactly. And that's very, and Ellie, you said it's very problematic and stuff, man, because see, again, Brother Elliot, see, these people, like I say, they when, like Brother Marcus said, see, when a black person get on their bad side, you they don't never forget. They might use you like they'll use Nick Cannon and Aaron Interim, because, like you said, they can put a rug from them. Look at the late mayor of New York, and I'm sure Jay's familiar with the David Dinkins. When that Jew ran over that young black child, a Hasidic Jew, and the black community out, you know, rose up. And think about how spiteful they are. Now, when Dinkins beat Giuliani the first time, he got large Jewish support. When he ran against Giuliani in the second time, Giuliani beat him. The Jews pretty much abandoned David Dinkins, and they voted for Giuliani because they was mad because he, you know, showed some empathy for his own people. He didn't show much, but he at least showed some concern, whether it was real or not. He showed some concern for the concerns of the black community, because this young black child got ran over by this Jewish thug, this drunk, whatever he was at the time, if it's a city Jew, and the black community was outraged and was asking for justice and stuff like that. So he at least appeared, and because he showed some empathy for his own people, he was labeled an anti-Semite. And see the show how they are. I'll never forget it, Brother Ellie and Richard. David Dickens, he did everything but kiss their behind. He wore a yarmulke. He went to the synagogue. He denounced Minister Farrakhan. And they still didn't forgive many of them up there in the New York Jewish group didn't forgive him. Even up to his dying day, many of them still consider him to be somewhat anti-Semitic. So you get on his bad side when you black, they don't give you no comeback. Like I said, they'll use you because it's in their interest. They only do it with Nick Cannon to use them, but they can pull a rug from under him anytime they feel like it. And this is why I say it's so problematic, because, you know, how long is we as a people, you know, going to be going through this where these people that take black men and stuff and just beat them down to nothing, where they out there begging and crawling. Now, here Nick Cannon got a wife, an ex-wife, who he had the Mariah Carey, one of the top actresses or singers you want out there, and they got twin daughters. I'm sure she ain't going to let her ex go broke. So, brother, why do you have to lower yourself like that to just come back begging just for those few trinkets and stuff, man? You know what I mean?
You know, I'm Elliot and Brother Joe, I hear the position, and I guess I am taking a oppositional position.
And that's fine, but you can if you want. That's fine.
Because I just see, as we saying this, the reality is that those, you know, what they're showing is they control the material and the communication mechanism that is being delivered. Mm. What we're showing, and using the metaphor, Elliot, that's Sister Cynthia McKinney used, is that those people who are standing on the sideline, that those of us who see those people, we have no control over them, and we have no control over the symbolic metaphor of whether, because it was a, you know, in that metaphor, it was a black person that was whipping him, right?
Mm-hmm.
While the white overseer was watching, and we have no control over them. So the question still comes back to, what is it that, if we're going to be playing chess, what is it that we need to be doing to get control? Because if a Nick Cannon is saying, and I don't think it's about money, I it's about access. And I think that even with Brother Carr, it's not about not defending him. It's about, well, who's going to defend him?
Yeah, okay.
Because, we don't have control over the mechanism to, if anybody come up, and we've seen that with Obama and Reverend, what was that?
Right.
Right. I mean, matter of fact, all the people were on for Obama. As many years we don't listen to, and people even said what he said wasn't right. We didn't have no control to put him in check. And then Michelle either, who comes back later, 4 years later, and say the same thing. So the question is that I don't hear us discussing, you know, we raised that it's about the mind. And what we heard that the rabbis say is that they need to control Cannon because he controls the mind of his people, if nothing else.
So, and I agree with you, Richard. I'm not disagreeing with you, Richard.
Or not what Cannon is doing, or not what others should have done, is why we don't have no control
right. over us.
And let me say this, Richard. I don't disagree with you. All I'm saying, Richard, to me, it's not either or. I think it's all combined. And all those things is together. To me, it's all interconnected and stuff. All that stuff that you just said, Richard, I don't disagree with. I think it's all interconnected. We got to deal with it from all fronts if we're going to ever get control, control the narrative. We got to deal with it from all fronts and stuff like that. And these people are insidious, man. They don't play by the rules, brother. They play by their own rules. And see, and let me say this. I'll piece these two things and I'm gone, Richard Nelly. Brother Elliot, I was talking to Brother Elliot yesterday, and he made me see, because I'm always, like I said, I'm like a sponge. I'm 59 years old, but I'm always willing to learn and stuff. I don't claim to know everything. Elliot gave me a perspective yesterday, Richard, that I hadn't even thought about when it comes to these Zionists or Jews, whatever you want to refer to them as and stuff. Because I was telling him about how they not coming out, because even CNN said the other last week how they've been, the Jewish community been very quiet, the ADL, the Jewish Defense League, all of them been very quiet, while Marjorie Taylor Greene been making anti-Semitic statements, like saying the Jewish cabal is responsible. I mean, this from the stuff she says, but it's just amazing. But she said the Jewish cabal was spraying stuff in the air that helped create the COVID-19 virus. That's what this woman said. She said it was white Jewish, wealthy Jewish bankers from the deep state that helped take down Donald Trump. I mean, she just spent all kinds of stuff. But like they said on CNN, the Jewish community been very silent and stuff like that. And not only with her statements, but even the baseball manager that did the Nazi salute and everything like that. And when I broke it down to Brother Elliot, Richard, Brother Elliot gave me a perspective to think about, which I admit I hadn't thought about before. And Brother Elliot said, Joe, they would love a bit to come out against her necessary, but see, the reason why they don't, because they can't spot them. See, Minister Farrakhan is a black man. I'm a black man. Deshaun Jackson is a black man. See, we stand out. So we if we came up into any kind of a Jewish synagogue, we stand out because our color speaks for itself. But see, these white folks, they all look the same, whether they're Jews, Irish, whatever. A lot of them got the same skin complexion. So some crazy white boy could come into a synagogue that's part of the Proud Boys or the alt-right, whatever. He would come in there with a yarmulke on and pull out a gun and just start killing everybody, which that white boy did in Pittsburgh a couple of years ago. So that's what got them in scared a lot of times for coming out against their own white brethren when they say these kind of things, because see, black people are low hanging fruit to them. We are easy target. But see, they know that these white boys, they don't want to get them riled up because they don't know who the hell they're dealing with. And like I said, Richard Elliot gave me a perspective to think about on that. And I thought about that and I said, that makes a lot of sense and stuff. That's why a lot of times they quiet in the face of these white people making these outlandish statements against them, because they know you don't want to get these white bigots riled up because they don't give a damn about black people, these white hate groups, but they don't like them white Jews either. They don't like their own brethren either, so they know what they're dealing with. So, I mean, it's just they know what they're up against.
They also, we don't have no history of having them run out of a place.
That's right, Richie. Right. We don't, and they know we're not a violent people, Richie. They know we're not going to do that. We know we're not our nature.
Those people have a history of putting them on the run.
Yes, yes, no question about it. And lastly, Richard, because I'm going to get off and stuff, thank y'all very much generous with your time. Richard, when you talk about the black identity groups and how white people in denial, because they did, I heard one of the conservative states, see, white America is in denial. When this white boy was talking all this stuff about, well, the black identity groups, the Black Lives Matter, these hateful black groups, the anti-police, anti-whatever. And a white boy that was on the show with him said, hold up, man. He said, just what you said, Richie, but you had your facts together. He said, don't you realize since 9/11, the white boy said it right on the conservative station, Brother Richard and Brother Ella. He said, don't you realize, he said, where's you living at? He said, you just don't want to deal with the reality. He said, since 9/11, he said the majority of these crimes from these extremists been white extremists. They've been responsible for hundreds, if not thousands, of people, Americans' deaths right here in America, he said, since 9/11. He said, but the thing is, he said, it's been downplayed not only by media, but it's been downplayed by law enforcement. He said, it's clear as day, Brother Richard, no question about that. And that's what I said, white Americans in denial. They know what their brother is capable of. They know how sick immoral and amoral their people are, but they're in total denial because they don't want to come to grips with that. And I close with this, like Brother Elliot said, they really, really don't want to go after their white brother in jail. That's why they come with these little bogus charges. They had been black folks that did all the same stuff. They've been charged with every damn thing, every crime since since Al Capone days. They've been charging with the RICO Act, everything. But they disorderly conduct. Let the white boy say he want to go on his vacation. Let him go on vacation because he don't miss his trip. The white girl that from Harrisburg, she going back to spend time with her mother. I mean, these people, man, they are just, man, I'm done, man. Let me get out of here, man. But thanks, Brother Richard and Elliot, for your time, man. I put me on mute, Brother Elliot, and I'll listen to the remainder of the show.
All right. Talk to you.
All right, my brother.
Let's go to 646-646. It's 10:09 here in the city of Philadelphia. I guess we got about 15 minutes left in the program. Let's go to 646-646.
Hey, what's up, Richard and Elliot? Let me ask you this. What am I, Little Joe's cleanup hitter or something like this, man? Why is it every week I got to come behind my man, Little Joe? I mean, you know, get a chance to bat in the cleanup spot every now and then. He may hit the ball. You know, don't let the brother just go out as a single hitter all the time. You got to go for the home run too, baby. Hey, listen, let me ask you this. What did Nick Cannon do? Because I surely would like to know what the brother did.
Well, what do you mean? What did he do?
What is the controversy with the Negro now?
Oh, no. It was the same one that happened. When was that? Last summer? No, it wasn't last summer. When was that, Richie? You remember? I think it was last winter or something.
Mm-hmm.
It was last winter. The statements that he made on his podcast with Professor Griff.
Okay. I heard the daddy gave him a little bit of a little pass. They letting him get his show back or something like that from what I saw in the newspaper today.
Yeah, they give him his show back, and then they signed some agreement. 170 celebrities and entertainers or whatever, this Black Jewish Alliance, and he's one of the signees.
And my question is this. What is the Black Jewish Alliance supposed to produce and promote? Anybody know that?
Well, on paper, this is what it says on paper. Now, we know that some of this stuff is worth the paper it's written on. But let me see it here.
I know.
It's a joint initiative by Black and Jewish entertainers in the industry professions devoted towards countering racism and anti-Semitism. In the face of institutional racism and rising anti-Semitism, the members of the alliance feel it's critical to stand together to support one another. That's what it's for.
Mm. Now, let me ask this question.
That's historical.
Hold on one second. I got a question to ask. In the history of the relationship between the Jew and us, have there ever been any form of equality to the point to where as the Jew, has that come out ahead in the equation? And that the Negro, has been definitely more than his bootlicker?
We set ourselves up as if we came into this equation as equals. We're already behind. We're behind. The only reason that alliance is because they feel that they increase their position in dealing with the other by having alliance. But our relationship, our material relationship and our historical relationship is different. They came over as owners. We came over as captives. And we haven't changed that relationship since we've been here. And they haven't changed their relationship.
Those that made the alliance with this Jew think that we equal, think that we allies, think that we friends, think that we partners, think that we all of the things that the illusion of the civil rights movement and the so-called working together between the Negro and the Jew being the backer of the NAACP, it's all come on stock.
And this is where I think, and I don't mean to go on, but
you know, again, I think it's framed wrong. Because we came over as captives, and because we came over as captives and been trying to, you know, if you take it from the perspective, we've been trying to change other people to do right by us by accommodating them.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
If you're the bootlicker,
that position that you're describing there to me is one without agency. Again, we have said that we're taking a position. You did wrong by us. We know that. You have ownership of everything. We know that. And what we're going to do is stay here and convince you to change the way you operate so you could treat us better. That's not being bootlegging. That's taking a position that some of us think that ain't going to work. But that's been a position that they have taken. And the quote unquote Jewish community, who has been on the run from the others or been pushed out by the others, has said, well, even though you don't own anything, it's better because you got more numbers than us. And we can shield ourselves and say we're fighting for the same thing, even though we don't have the same thing. So we have an alliance with you.
Hey, Richard, let's be clear. Please let's be clear. And the audience, please do the research that's necessary. There is no alliance between black people and no goddamn body in this country. You know what I mean? There is no alliance. You can't show me no alliance with black folks, people, and any other ethnic group in this country where it is a true alliance, where there's equal partnership in dealing with the systemic problems that face both communities. Let's stop playing games.
Oh, I agree. That's why I said there is no. That's why I said there is no alliance.
But you can't deny
it becomes ridiculous.
But see, the thing is, but when we make our analysis as if we haven't taken that position, then we're also mischaracterizing the situation we're in.
Who took the position?
Because black folks have taken a position. Somebody called it alliance. Maybe black folks called it alliance. But
No, your gatekeepers call it alliance. No, bro. Stop. The people that call it an alliance are the ones who are on television and want to place you in a situation of whiteness so they can keep their damn position that the white man give them. Perfect example, this chick, Angela Rye. She just left CNBC, and now she over at NBC, MSNBC, and she's now going to be the gatekeeper for black folks in that situation. Now, who appointed her black behind anything?
But the thing
it's
is,
quite obvious that the white man got sick of her and kicked her off of CNN. They would talk about her supposedly getting a show with Bakari Seller, a crying Negro, and the twisted sister, Andrew Gillum. That didn't materialize, so I guess they decided we're going to ship over to the other Negro overseeing team and let her work her special magic. Come on, man. Why don't we just stop playing games?
Control, like Nick Cannon.
She ain't got control over nothing.
Wait a minute.
How could she have control if they got rid of a black ass?
Because she's saying, using my metaphor, just because she changed plantation, that don't mean she don't take the people that she,
she got all right,
to a new plantation. The people who love Angela Ryan, the people who love Nick Cannon, they will go with them wherever they go. The point is, and I'm reemphasizing, unfortunately, is that we don't have control over Angela Rye's people to say, don't go to that plantation. They kicked her out of that plantation. Here is the plantation you should be on. We don't have that control over those people. And those people.
Richard, you're in denial, my brother. I love you. You're my man. But you're in denial when you don't understand and you can't see that these people are nothing more than gatekeepers that are keeping us in a box, trying to get us into this form of whiteness that ain't going to do nothing for us as a people but keep us oppressed and slaves. Now,
I'm saying I'm trying to operate from the perspective of self-criticism. Of self,
we can't be doing that no more, bro. We got to stop with that self-criticism. We had a war that we don't even realize we had a war, and we trying to critique Negroes who put the nail in our coffin every chance they get.
That's the point about,
we got to feel good about them.
We're critiquing them too much. We're watching them too much.
You got to critique the person that's putting the nail in your back. You can't critique some white folks when you got black people that's going along with it and doing us dirty every chance they get, selling us out. I mean, look at this whole situation with Stacey Abrams and the rest of them Negroes in Georgia. Have Research West call up and tell them what done got better for black people in Georgia? And show you how deep it is, to show you how much white folks work with one another. The Democrats, if we're going to talk politics, ain't even ready to put the hammer to these crackers. They ain't talking about the John Lewis bill. They ain't talking about a damn thing to make the life of black people better. Come on, man. Cut it out.
And you're not supposed to.
You sound ridiculous.
And that's not supposed to. I'm just saying, and I'll stop with this. I'm just saying, or trying to say, or trying to see, and I think I hear your point. And what I see even here on Time for Awakening, last week we dealt with people who are dealing with economic development. What's that, Africa Town, Charles Barron. Before that, we dealt with people with independent political parties, and all of them say, you know, as they are doing that work, they are doing that. They ain't paying attention to Angela Rye. They're not paying attention to Cannon. They're paying attention to how do you build up a power situation to where, as the metaphor you say, they can't put no nail in your back. And I'm saying that's what we need to be focusing on. We know that the Jews or those Jews who have control over them, they have control over them because they want to use their system. What we have to do to make our system strong enough, powerful enough, that we can be able to, with a pawn, if we're going to play chess.
Hey, Richard, let me explain something to you.
Maybe not checkmate.
Let me explain this to you right quick, because I know the time is almost over. Let me explain this to you. I love Charles Barron. I love those brothers that was on Sunday. But let's be very, very clear. Anytime they want to get rid of their black ass and cut them off at the knees, they can do it.
But that's
and
anybody.
Once they do,
that's
let me finish. Like, let me finish. Let me finish the point. Can I finish the point?
But you make a new point, bro. My point is this. With Angela Rye, right?
Bro, anytime my point is this. You're not listening. You're not listening. You're in denial. The point of the matter is they can do whatever they choose to do to us. And then once they do it, you have people like Jim Clyburn, the Angela Rye, and the rest come in and justify it. And then we in the position having to pick sides and pick sides on the equation. And because we're not clear on the direction that we should be going, we'll never pick the sides of those brothers and Charles Barron, because they're making it seem as though they are a threat to the progress of the Negro. They are a threat to the progress of the Negro because they separating and they doing things that are not in the best interest of, as they say, the collective, which is white folks. Stop playing games. You don't have no power to stop them from doing anything. Anytime they want to do something to you, they will do it to us because they got one thing. They got gatekeepers. to keep us in line. Every situation since we done came out of slavery has been because of that, because of the gatekeepers who have been able to justify our mistreatment and brutality. Jim Claiborne is the perfect example of a Negro like that. Stop playing games.
I don't believe that, right?
I think I take the position.
I think, brother, and it's fortunate, and I apologize for it, but I take the brother, brother Marcus said, because I have one thing I do have faith in. I don't know nothing about, you know, faith in what people call God, but I have faith in African people. It's when you don't have faith in African people. See, the conclusion when you don't have faith is that we have been, and we always will be a powerless, controlled, you know, under the thumb, bootlicking people. But if you have,
yeah, well, why is that?
No, I'm not stopping there. I take it from what I hear. That's where you stop. I'm saying I'm going into a realm unknown, and faith to me in African people is going into a realm unknown, that I have faith that we can do it, that we will do it, that we will figure out, as we have done, to overcome obstacles and challenges before us. It may not be in a day, it may not be in a year, it may not be in 500 years, but we will.
It's a simple solution, Richard. It's a simple solution. You know what the simple solution is? South African burning neckties with Negroes like the gatekeepers. First thing you got to do, and Mao taught us this, but nobody want to look at that form of a culture, a murderous culture, when it had to and when it was necessary. Now look at where China is now. Once he cleaned up his house, what did he start doing? Started cutting off heads.
Let me finish this point
because I'm going to bring it all together. And this is what I was talking about early on Carl show. When you have this movie, American Strength, and you put together the type of propaganda that movie did, that's why we're in the position that we're in and the trouble that we have is in the community. Because whenever he can make a movie and at the end of the movie, kill the person that killed his son and suffer the consequences of death or going to jail, then we'll be in a whole different light, brother. But see, the white man ain't gonna let you do that. So what he do is he lets you put forward something that will confuse your black behind so that it's justifiable and it's deemed all right to oppress you. Until we start South African burning neckties, we're gonna be in this position till you die, your grandchildren die, and their children die. Ain't nothing gonna never change for us until we make that supreme sacrifice. That's why you never see that sacrifice shown, brother. And they won't let you talk about it. They won't even let you put forward a narrative of something like that happening and dealing with that situation. You have never seen it, but you'll have a Negro, and what they do is come give you a somewhat visualization of that could happen and then go every which way he can to say to you why it shouldn't happen based on some BS of humanity. It's a game.
Well, let me deal with the people that have no humanity. Well, let me say this before we wind up. When Richard gave the example of the brothers last week and Charles Brown to give them advice, the thing that we have to realize is those men is working in the spirit of our ancestors. In adverse situations, they devise plans where they're going to make moves among the people that have been against them. We already know the white power structure is against what they're trying to do, but they made moves to circumvent the gatekeepers, as you say. They have been successful in Seattle, a city with only a 7% black population and a 65% white population. But blacks have been there in that city almost as long as whites have been out there.
Yep.
But it's a unity. It's obviously a unity among the people that's out there to work together. And
the stranglehold of the black community.
And if they see what they want, they've been able to access it. The same way that the brothers here that Richard worked with, they seen properties. They tried to go to the gatekeepers and get those things and tell them what they wanted to do in the community. But when the gatekeepers didn't want to help them turn a deaf ear, what did they do? They didn't go back home and sit and complain and say, we ain't going to never be able to do this. They went and unified, and they took the places. And Barron was giving them help, saying the same thing politically. If we're gonna sit back and complain about these people, or we're going to take control of our communities. We can't keep saying we can't do it and blaming these gatekeepers or whatever, however we want it, Uncle Tom, however we want to say it, because they're going to be what they're going to be. Just like Sister Julia Hare, our ancestor, says in that thing, if a man going to be a Tom, he going to be a Tom no matter where he is.
Till the day he die.
But the thing is, if we going to be in the mode of our ancestors, we supposed to be that wherever we are. And those men weren't those men were not quitters. They were not quitters. They wasn't resigned to, well, we're going to always be on this plantation. They was doing it till the day they died. We're going to be successful in what we're doing. We just got to help the people that's doing it.
Right.
Barron and his wife.
That's why you got to support them. That's why you got to support them.
Well, that's what I'm saying. And the support.
And those Negroes that's going to try and hurt them.
Oh, I agree with that. That's what we try to do in the program. We got to alert the people against them.
That's why the program was good. It was an excellent program because he showed you the steps that you have to take to be able to do it. Now it boils down to this. Are we gonna support them? Are we gonna support them? That's the main thing. Are we gonna support them? Are we gonna place ourselves in a situation to where, as in Brooklyn, if Charles and his wife get into a situation, it boils down to this: is the community gonna come out and support them when it comes time to be reelected? Look at what happened to our sister Cynthia McKinney in Atlanta. Think about that. Always remember, man, that beautiful queen, she stood up. She was fighting power on the level that it should be able to do what it do. And what happened? The Jew came in and basically cut her off at the knees. And we allowed the Jew to cut her off at the knees, and then we turn around. Now think about this. We then go years later and help a Jew and a pork chop chicken eating pimp preacher. That's the sickness that we have. How in God's green earth could we as a people ever give up on Cynthia McKinney, but we allow other people to come along?
You find a way to go right back to your reset, and that is, in the end, we gonna fail. That's okay. Your voice,
talking about failing.
I mean,
talking about holding people accountable in the beginning. Don't wait years and years later to come back to the community
and say we now want to give you somebody else when
they done been hurting us.
Before we wind it up, let me say this in conclusion. If you remember last week in the conversation you had with Charles Barron, and you were telling him about Hakeem Jeffries and what he's doing. Did you remember what he said? You remember what he told you?
He said he's going to do what he had to do and keep moving.
He said, you can't worry about these people.
Right. He's going to keep moving.
He mentioned several people. He said Cory Booker, people in that mindset of Hakeem Jeffries, Cory Booker, Barack Obama. He said, you can't worry about those people. You got to keep moving. Well, that's all Rich has been saying. We got to keep working. We got to alert the community about what these people are doing. That's in our small way. That's what me and Richard try to do, is alert the people on these people that have been, that are against them or have a track record of being against their people, even though they act like they're for their people. We got to alert our people to that. But we also going to showcase the advancements of our and what they're trying to do. So if people want to join in with them, they got something they can join in with. They don't have to sit around the community and say, well, ain't nothing going on, because a lot of our people still have those conversations. Our people ain't doing nothing. When our people are doing things, we just don't know about them.
Well, I say like this. Nick Cannon is a minor in the major, man. He's a rich individual. He's going to always be a rich individual. And it shows where he's at that he would even get back in bed with somebody who cut him off on his knee. What is the purpose of going back into bed with somebody who cut you off on the knee? I mean, to me, I just wouldn't do it. But, I mean, hey, man, he's trying to get paid. And I respect him. I'm not gonna disrespect his hustle and his desire to get paid, because listen, man, he got, you know, a family. He got something that a lot of times people don't talk about. He got employees that he gotta take care of, and he gotta make whole, and he gotta try to keep them living. You know, that's what always upset me about the situation with Tavis Smiley, man. You know, even though Tavis Smiley got spanked, but let's be very clear about what happened with Tavis, man. Tavis employed a lot of people. Tavis, in a lot of sense, was, you know, self-sufficient. That's why, you know, I rock with Roland Martin on certain things, because the deal is, you know, Roland is trying to be independent. I just get upset that he doesn't put people on his program that are conscious, and he doesn't deal from an African perspective, but he want to try and present himself as an African wearing kente cloth and all that other, you know, thing. And then I'm always upset about what he did to that young boy, Adam Jackson. I can't wait for the day you get Adam Jackson on your show, man. That's one of the most dynamic young brothers we got out here. I rock with that kid whenever. If there was any young man I would rock with, I'd rock with him, because he's a monster. That brother's a monster. For a young cat, man, he's clear. He knows what he's dealing with. He knows who his enemy is. He got a plan for our people to move forward. He's just a beautiful brother, man. That's all I'm going to say. And listen, hopefully y'all have a guest on Sunday. And I'm listening. Did Research West call in today?
Well, he was on. He didn't.
Okay, because I didn't. I've been heard Research. I didn't even hear him on the Carl Nelson show or anything, man. I just want to make sure Research all right, man, because that's my man. He ain't even calling the OC this week, I don't think. So Brother Research, if you listening, holler at the people on Sunday, please, and let us know that you doing the do. Have a good one, brothers.
Talk to you. Richard, come to the end of another program. It was interesting. It was interesting dialogue, man.
Yes, it is. It's important and necessary.
Yeah, I agree. the struggle continues, and you know, we just got to keep doing what we're doing, man. It's good to give out information. It's good to alert the people on the pitfalls that we may see, you know, and folks might see others. And that's why it's good to have open discussion. You know, folks see things that we might not see, and vice versa. So, you know, that's how it is.
Word.
Before we wind things up, tomorrow afternoon from 4 to 6, Black Sister Talk with host LaWanda Chambers, and then from 7 to 9, later Saturday evening, the Elders of Sankofa with Brother Alfonso Watkins, and then Time for an Awakening is back on Sunday evening at 7. I want to thank everybody for listening to the program this evening. A lively discussion, as always, and we'll be back on Sunday, Lord willing, to continue on this path towards an awakening. Peace.
If you're driving through the country on a plane. children playing after school. They seem to be so unaware. Oh, I know the things that they'll soon have to take care of. We've got to do something, yeah, to save the children. Soon it will be their turns to try and save the world. Right now they seem to play such a small part of.
To save the children.